Welcome on our Friday panel in studio with us this morning. There are questions coming in for our panel already this morning. Bláthain Gallagher and Mark McSharry. Bláthain from County Leitrim, member of the Executive Committee of the Green Party, and Deputy McSharry, of course, Fianna Fáil TD for Sligo Leitrim. Morning to you both, and thanks for joining us. Well, first of all, are any of you travelling through the Dublin Airport this weekend or in coming weekends? Or no, not that you know.
Absolutely not, and very glad not to be. But actually, I think of all the weekends, this weekend might be the best one to get through it. It must be really terrible for people who have any sort of infirmity, who haven't booked assistance, for people with children. And then also for the staff who are there when they come in, having to deal with these disgruntled people and rightly frustrated and angry. But it must be terrible for them. There must be a big impact on them. But we have to look, now we have to look at why that's happened and look at the whole, there's very little talk about the contracts, you know, that's been offered. And if you don't offer people something and that's worthwhile and value your employees, then you've got an issue.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you think that may have been the reason the chickens were coming home to roost last weekend?
Well, I think
weekend.
It must be. I mean, why would you? I mean, I know of, anecdotally, a friend of my nephew who was working there on a 20-hour contract but being expected to be around for 40 hours. Now, that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's putting it all in the employer's basket, and it's not fair.
Right, OK. And I don't know if you tuned in or heard any of the Oireachtas committee session with the chief executive of the Dublin Airport Authority, or what did you make of his explanation?
I don't think
he's in that position. He's heading for
If you're in management, you've got to foresee these things. It is not all about making money. It's about value for the customer, value for the experience. I mean, listen to the number of people who were interviewed who thought they may never come back to Ireland again because they imagine this. Now, I think the other thing the media is missing, that is, it isn't just an Irish problem. I was on a meeting with somebody from the Netherlands this week who was travelling and really was dreading going to Schiphol because they were having the same thing, and somebody from London. They're all having... So it's across Europe. But we have to look at our whole system. This is about money. If we're not prepared to pay people what we value them in the name of making profit, then we have an issue.
Right, OK. Mark McSharry, what did you make of it? And has it been very, very damaging for our reputation and our tourist
airports
business?
Having similar problems. Firstly, to answer your question, I would be going through Dublin. I tend to plan my trips around Knock or Belfast or Shannon to avoid that even.
Just ordinarily,
I would. Yeah, absolutely. Because Dublin has become so difficult. It's a very large airport now with a very large amount of traffic. So to reduce the level of stress, I mean, Knock is just a dream, to be quite honest. But I think some of the short-sightedness and reactionary nature of the whole COVID pandemic in terms of redundancy packages or whatever. I mean, the pandemic was always going to become less of a challenge as we went through it, and that's certainly short-sighted, where you're talking about staff that require a certain level of training, guard the clearance and so on, and that had to be predictable, it would seem to me, from their perspective. But you know, Dalton Phillips clearly had his eye on the next move, which was to be CEO of Greencore. And perhaps that shows. Maybe the BI wasn't on the ball to the extent that it should be. But look, it wasn't entirely down to poor management. There are issues throughout Europe, Manchester and Schiphol as well, and Amsterdam, as Bláthain has mentioned. I hope, I mean, in the interest of people, you know, school tours, young families, people travelling abroad to attend a funeral, all of those things, I hope things run smoothly this weekend.
That's it. You see, there were suggestions this week that, you know, it's a first world problem. It was people heading off abroad on holidays, and we should be concentrating more on dealing with overcrowding in our hospitals and so forth. But not everybody in those queues were heading on holidays.
No, of course.
Last weekend.
There are people travelling for a wide variety of family reasons. They could be going for treatment, indeed abroad in healthcare treatment. They could be attending funerals, work-related travel, and all of that type of stuff. So it's not just a case of that.
Right.
Well, also, people are now starting to re-emerge to visit family that they haven't seen in over 2 years, sometimes 3 or 4 years, and that has to be understood as well, do you know?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a lot more. Well, as you both said, I think that should have been predict it and should have been seen by management. But in any case, let's hope the problems are behind us this weekend, which I suspect they very much will be. Have you ever slept in your car in Dublin?
Never.
I didn't like that story.
I mean,
did you not?
Like anybody who has to stay in hotels in Dublin or whatever, the prices have gone through the roof. I didn't like that story from a political perspective. I mean, if I was faced with a situation where I had to sleep in my car, I'd drive home, you know. Obviously, Sligo wasn't really commutable, so I do stay in a hotel. I book at the beginning of January for the whole year. And for that reason, then, you know, you'll always have to cancel a night or maybe seek an extra one depending on the week as you go through the year. But most hotels will honour that then. So I did a rate at the beginning of the year and I still have that rate. Yeah. Now, I'd imagine come next September, after the Dáil recess, I'd imagine they'll be putting the price up significantly. So it's about good planning. I didn't like the idea of somebody staying to sleep in the car, particularly somebody who, you know, it wasn't as if they were travelling to the Bear Peninsula, you know.
Yeah, well, he's a Fianna Fáil colleague, and I know you probably know him well as well. So,
it's not a case of that. But I'm talking about the issue rather than the individual. Yeah, but I didn't like it at all.
I think he was saying he was trying to save the taxpayer money, but yeah. You know, he could have got a hotel, but he would have had to pay a huge price. And
yeah, no, I don't think it was to do with saving taxpayer.
Wasn't that okay?
No. But the best, and he's a very decent man, but I think he got this one wrong.
Okay, Blaheen, what did you make? Well, we come to the wider issue in a moment.
It's a difficult one to comment on. Sometimes you wonder about stories like that and, what's the purpose behind them? I know it's highlighting hotel prices, but as Mark said, it perhaps may not have been the best way to do it when you have people who can't even really afford to put bread and milk on their table at the moment. And when they, you know, I know I was using the argument that, like, I'm on a big salary and I can't afford a hotel room. I just don't think it was appropriate at the time. But that's not to take away from the rise in hotel prices. I think that is something that badly needs to be addressed.
Well, absolutely. Well, that's interesting that both of you might be critical of Eugene Murphy's public declaration. But let's deal with the hotel room price, and I really don't know what to say about this, and you will be aware of the story we ran yesterday of the young lads from Sligo heading to the Bruce Springsteen concert, and they're getting four nights in Rome and flights to Rome and concerts for the ticket cheaper than they can by going up to Dublin, their home country, for one night. I mean, that's just an extraordinary situation, Blaheen, isn't it?
Yeah, if I heard correctly, it was a hotel. They named the hotel in Smithfield. It was €500 for one night in a hotel room. I mean, that is extraordinary. I mean, normally those hotel rooms would be around €100, maybe less than that. So part of me thinks, like, this price, it's price gouging. It doesn't matter if it's demand. Is it really right to charge that amount of money? Because it's short-term thinking. What we're going to have is people, tourists coming to this country going, we're just rip-off Culture Ireland. We need to provide value for money for our people coming in, both our Irish people and the people who are coming in to visit us. If you get a value for money experience, even if you pay a lot of money and you're willing to do that, you won't mind. But if you go pay €500 for a hotel room that you could probably pay €55, at off-peak times, you are not going to go away thinking this country values anybody. And so, that's the taste that'll be left in your mouth.
But what can you do about it? What do you do about it if you're in government? How do you deal with that?
I was thinking about this. Now, I mean, okay, hotel businesses have been in trouble, and I don't know what the minister can do. But part of me was thinking that there should be nearly a windfall tax for people who are making this extraordinary money at this short time, when people are in trouble, when the country's in trouble, when inflation is rising. There should be a price cap. I don't know if that's possible under our constitution or whatever, but to have somebody paying €500 for a room that's between 55 and 85 normally, there should be something to stop that happening.
Mark McSherry, what do you make of this?
It's not a new phenomenon. I mean, hotels. I don't beat them up. They give a lot of employment over the years, and they did have a difficult time during COVID and all of that time. So
yeah, but they were supported financially by government.
No, they were. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not defending that. But this predates COVID. You know, I mean, if it's a rugby international weekend, a room that was 85. You know, it's supply and demand. You know, there's 40 rooms left in Dublin, and they're going to be 200, 300, 400. You know, I think the average price for a city centre hotel, so kind of, you know, Dublin 2, 4, 6, Dublin 1 and 3, you're probably at an average price of 125 per night or something like that. Okay,
yeah.
So for Bruce Springsteen and all the rest of it, and these concerts, they always push them up. I mean, I remember. Trying to look for a hotel for going to a soccer international, and there was concerts on the same night or whatever, and it was like 350 or 370 quid, you know.
But what our listeners are telling us, it's not just for those concerts and football matches at the moment. Yeah. It's even in midweek the prices are.
Well, of course, we're taking up a proportion of hotel rooms all over Dublin because of our failure to deal with the homelessness crisis, the housing crisis, and of course we have. Our Ukrainian guests as a result of the war. I mean, certainly that's some of it. I've no doubt that there's an element of gouging as well. I don't know what you do. I don't think a tax to say, right, well, we're going to look at your profitability and you know, you did particularly well, so we're going to tax you more. I mean, we have a progressive taxation system anyway, so if they're making more, they're going to pay more. But
The two-tier VAT rate was touted during the week. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, you could put that back up. I mean,
for some and not for others.
But no, you couldn't do that now. No, you couldn't say, okay, the following hotels are going to be at 13% and the rest will be at 9%. It'll be all or nothing. That's something that could be looked at, but that's given assistance. That's not just hotels, that's restaurateurs, it's a variety of businesses. And when we get to, as I'm sure we'll get to, the cost of living generally, I mean, there's an argument for bringing those down further, but ensuring that the savings are passed to the consumers.
Well, let's turn to the cost of living. First of all, a couple of texts say, Martin and Ballester said, good man, Mark. Knock is a dream. He's absolutely right. I flew out of Knock last week. What a relaxing start to a holiday. And that's half, if not more, the attraction that when you leave relaxed and come back relaxed. Someone else says, Mark McSharry, where is our €1,000 healthcare's money we were supposed to get? Or don't we count? Is travel more important? Well, I don't suppose Deputy McSharry has any influence in relation to that particular payment.
No, I don't, but I mean, we've certainly been lobbying to make sure that the full spectrum of frontline healthcare workers get the bonus. I think there was some movement on that during the week.
Yeah, Stephen Donnelly was certainly said, I think he wanted the payment to be fairly immediate.
Yeah.
Could you ask the two in the panel, you're talking about Dublin airports as this person, you're spending too much time in Dublin airport, do they not realise the problems people have to deal with, like accessing cancer services from North Leitrim, Sligo and Donegal, i.e. the total cost of staying 7 or 8 weeks at a time? I'm sure you're both acutely aware of that situation. Let's get to the cost of living, Bláthnaid. It's tough out there for people, as we know.
Yeah.
Are the government doing enough? Should they be doing more?
Well, I suppose it's going to be very difficult for the government to cushion the entire blow of it. But I do know that they've, you know, they have made some efforts at addressing this, like there have been the cuts in public transport, the cuts in the diesel. I mean, all of this is fueled by the rising oil prices, really, and the war. And, you know, it just shows that our dependency on oil and gas, how it impacts everything that we do in the world. So I'm not sure. There has been a €2 billion package put in. Is that enough? No, it'll never be enough, because there will always be people who need. Look, even before this inflation, we have quite a poverty issue here in this country. We have people who are struggling, so we need to address that, and we need to make sure we have a more equal and just society. And like, if you think about it, at Davos, I mean, I think it's crazy. At Davos, there at the end of May, you have millionaires and billionaires protesting that they are not being taxed enough. Like, we have these rich and powerful people going into private discussion about how they are going to help the world, and yet it's simple. Oxfam have shown it, so many people have shown it. Just tax, even if you did 2% tax on people with over between 0 and 5 million, what Oxfam suggested, 3% over people between 5 and 50, and 5% with people over 50. If you just did that tax in 1 year, in the money they made during the pandemic, because you do know all the money, if you just did that, there'd be something like $242 trillion available, which would cover the hunger and poverty in the world.
So why isn't that happening? If as you said, and it's true, because I read the article myself, these millionaires and not billionaires coming forward to say they want and need and should be taxed more, then why isn't it happening?
I think that is the answer. It's the because there's a small number of powerful people in lobbying positions and in control. Look at the gun laws in America, for example. I couldn't believe, I saw somebody sent me a list of all the shootings, that you know, the massive shootings that happened, and I thought it was over 10 years. In fact, it was in the last year.
Yeah.
I mean, but yet, there's somebody behind the scenes with power, wielding power that they should not have, that stops these things happening. And I think it's the same for tax. I know enough, but I think it's the same thing. The powerful people don't want to let go of what they have.
A woman rang in during the week, early in the week, Deputy McSharry, absolutely appalled and amazed that petrol was costing over €2 per litre in Ballymote. That's where she was getting her petrol. And then all of a sudden, It's over two everywhere. It's gone beyond two, as we know. What sense are you getting from people in relation to cost of living and being able to afford to live? And do you think your government is doing as much as they can do?
Based tax system, so VATs and excises, I think more can be done in the short term, particularly on fuel. Have to travel, whether it's short distances or to schools or whatever, or longer distances like myself. Everybody can see that, you know, it's kind of a 30% increase in filling the car now or more for me, and I've certainly noticed that. And of course, we haven't had inflation for over 20 years. Now, we did have spikes in oil at different times. I mean, it was heading for $150 a barrel at one stage, which is a lot more than it is at the moment. And yet prices didn't spike as much. So I wonder about the speculation around it. I mean, definitely if we're going to cut Russian oil off, that's going to make the situation worse, not better, in the short term. And what I'd love if we were in a position to depend exclusively or a lot more on renewables, that's just not the reality. And we're going to have a level of dependency on these oils and gas for a considerable period to come. Another problem, I'd say, is, and we regularly hear about all the wind we have offshore here. At the moment, companies that I've spoken to who are scoping out the potential to put offshore wind farms, say, off Malin Head, they're substantially out in the sea. I mean, you wouldn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
Their difficulty would be bringing it ashore. We don't have the infrastructure to bring it ashore. And you have it in Cork and you have it in Dublin on the East Coast. You don't have it over here. And they're actually looking at these companies. How could we put a line from off Malin Head, this windiest place in our waters apparently, all the way to Liverpool? Because you can't bring it into Ireland because we don't have the infrastructure. And then put that against our planning process, how difficult it is to put in large-scale infrastructure progress. How much that we all have NIMBYism, we all want the renewables, but we don't want it in our backyard. And that's a problem. And the one issue I'd have with our, you know, the very well-intentioned Eamon Ryan and the Green Party is, you know, you can't start penalising us before we have alternatives. And that's where I'd have an issue with things like carbon tax and other ones. I mean, hold on a second now. You know, the peat thing, we're importing peat and all of that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, you know, we're ignoring our own, and it's a kind of this optical illusion that we're entering into. Look, we're doing great work here. We're doing our bit; other larger countries aren't. And I just think
so. Give people an alternative.
We have a policy alignment problem. I know Brian probably disagrees, and we have a policy alignment problem, and it's the people that are suffering. I mean,
do you agree with that or not?
Talk about the carbon tax for a second. Like, the carbon tax is only a tiny amount of money. It's about €1.50 on your oil bill or your gas bill a month. However, all of that money has been ring-fenced and it's going back into fuel poverty. It's going back into retrofitting. And that's, I think, if taxes do that, then I think they're a good idea, a really good idea, because we have to invest if we're going to do this. Like, the IPCC report, the EPA report, are saying we're running out of time. So we're not prepared, but we knew about this 40 years ago. The Green Party was founded 40 years ago, and they were considered crackpots, they were considered, you know, hippies. Nobody listened. If people had listened, we may not be in the position we're in now.
The only thing I'd say, though, is I'd just be conscious about our capabilities as a country. And I think the average Irish person is very focused and accepting of the climate change challenges. However, if Brazil, India, Russia, the United States, and the African nations don't get with the programme, frankly, it could set Ireland alight from Malin to Mizzen. And we wouldn't make the slightest indentation in the world. And as just Irish people are just getting a little bit weary of, you know, the level of control, the level of constant push. I'm all for it. What we should be doing, if you ask me, is investing billions immediately, and I'd gazump the planning process to allow it to happen, to be able to bring ashore the offshore wind that I've been telling you about. And we're not doing it.
No,
we're not doing it at all.
No, I agree with you, Mark.
So it doesn't matter how much you do.
Planning is an issue. But look at our output per capita. We are something like the third highest output of carbon emission in this world per capita. I mean, that is an issue. We have to start at home. We are a wealthy country. Yes, we have inflation, but we have to start here. Look at the impact of climate change on people in Africa, in Yemen, in places that people are starving now because of our first world belief that we have a right, or, you know, we have a kind of a right to spend, and we shouldn't have to cut back until we have perfect solutions in place. I agree, it's especially difficult for people where there is no public transport, where there is no alternatives to oil. But yes, I also agree the government needs to invest. We invested in supporting people during the pandemic. I think we need to treat climate change like the pandemic and invest there. Invest now.
Stop blaming Putin, says this person. The last increase was because the EU banned the import of Russian oil. The increase before that was the Dublin regime putting on more carbon tax, talking about cutting the rods to beat their own backs with. And someone else says, can the panel discuss what's going on in Bord Pleanála at the moment? My son is waiting 5 months to get a decision, and now they're looking for another 3 months. I think that's something you mentioned at one stage, Deputy. Yeah, I don't know if you want to get into it now, but I think you...
There are issues, obviously, in there at the moment where there are people who have stepped aside pending investigations or whatever. But, in a reaction against corruption in this country, in politics, we subcontracted all authority to third-party agencies, unelected individuals, and that in itself can lead to other corruption. Whereas people have been elected to do jobs, they should have input into that, and they don't. So on Bord Pleanála is an island out there on its own with no political input, and it should have, quite frankly. Now, if that input is abused in any way, then the full rigours of the law should come down on the politician, whoever it is, in the same way as there's an investigation because of allegations against the vice chairman of On Bord Pleanála. And it's the same across our whole policy forum. You know, you're electing people who are basically furniture in Leinster House because all of the power is vested in unelected bodies. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, I'm at it for years, in terms of my criticism of the higher echelons of civil service and the level of control and unanswerable nature of their positions. I see this week the Irish Independent seem to be doing a series of articles on it, and it might be gaining a little bit of momentum. I mean, the idea of a citizens' assembly is a total abdication of the Parliament of its own responsibilities. You know, it's we'll stick the difficult decision into a hotel in South Dublin, we'll pay a few people to come up with it, and then we'll say, well, they decided, therefore we should adopt. I mean, you have a citizens' assembly on Kildare Street, a very expensive one.
Mark, on the citizens' assembly, I think the citizens' assembly are a really good idea because, remember, people are elected by the citizens, and we have a diverse citizenship and we have a diverse residency of the country. So having a citizens' assembly allows people to put all their points forward. It also allows them to see the other side, and it's not just done in a combative, argumentative way.
Abolish the Dáil then, and let's just have a citizens' assembly, because it's one or the other. And to be honest, the citizens' assembly, even the Chief Justice that ran the one before last, admitted that people have been selected for that. It's not flawless in how they select people.
But nothing is flawless.
Citizens' Assembly or Dáil Éireann, one or the other.
No, that's absolutely not. I think you can have both and you can learn from both. And like, Mark, your electricity, you're responsible to the citizen. Why not give the citizens another voice in it?
What I'm saying is it's an abdication in leadership by the system.
No, we won't
take the difficult decisions. So as I said, Mark, we'll put a few people into a hotel. They're not fairly chosen.
Are you saying they're making the law? Your job in the Dáil is as a legislator.
Because of the system we operate.
Yeah. Well, it's changed the system then.
The system we operate is in Fianna Fáil, if you vote against anything, you're thrown out. In the Greens, you can vote against whatever you want. Nothing happened, as we saw.
Mark.
Nasa Horrigan, she's still a chair of a committee. And the reality is, the Citizens' Assembly will take whatever decision on whatever issue. It goes into the Dáil, and the Dáil says three bags full, because the establishment parties will use their whip, and that will happen. That is not democracy. It is a dictatorship disguised as democracy.
This person says, Citizens' Assembly is more than democratic, but as opposed to that, someone else says, I totally agree with Mark McSharry in relation to the Citizens' Assembly. It has no place in our society or democracy at all. Citizens' Assembly, full of people who were selected by the Red Sea Polling Company. And the last one was actually full of friends of the people working for Red Sea, allegedly, they say. But there you go. Right. Citizens' Assembly, who elects them? How are they?
As far as I understand it, it is a random selection. I don't know exactly how it works, but if you're, you know, sometimes when you have people in an area, they all have an interest. They may have been protesting together on something.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're all friends. I don't know exactly how it is,
And people want your views on the passport issues and so forth. We'll get to as many as we can, but it strikes me we are halfway through the current government, if all goes to plan, 2.5 years, but it's not worth your while turning up next time out blind, according to polls.
That's exactly what people say. But look at what has been achieved by the Green Party in this legislature.
Yeah, and I don't mean just the Green Party. I'm just talking in general. I mean, it's Sinn Féin all the way, is it not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do believe Sinn Féin have had a huge rise in, their founders. They've been a long time trying to get here, so they have risen, and they are the polls. But who knows what happens? 2.5 years is a long time. We have to look at what's happening across the country. We have to look at real policy. What are the policies and how do they follow through? It is very easy to talk and shout from the sidelines for every politician. When you get into government, you have job to do within the restrictions of that job. We all would love to change things immediately. But Mark, you've been in a government party for a long time, so you know all the restrictions that come with that. And whereas you want to do some things, you can't always.
Is that very frustrating for someone, well, not just for yourself, but anybody within
I would say it's absolutely frustrating because, you know, it's very hard to understand why things can't be done. But it is a democracy. You have to look at who the percentage of the people you represent, and you have to adjust your, I don't know, you have to compromise. Compromise is the only thing I could say. And it's a difficult thing to compromise, you know.
Okay. Like in a coalition setting, three parties are going to have to compromise on things. But the piece that's missing is the leadership piece and taking responsibility. At the moment, 10 or 12 senior civil servants in this country have all of the power and none of the responsibility. That requires legislative change in three acts: the Ministers and Secretaries Act, the Public Service Management Act, and there's one from 1956 in the Civil Service Act. I just can't recall it. All it takes is the political will and the leadership to do that by a minister of the day in the relevant department.
But it has always been like that.
Consistently, they have abdicated that responsibility. No, it has not. A practice has emerged. A practice has emerged, and we've seen it. You saw the Holland thing. You saw the increased salary for what? A practice has emerged, but they just don't challenge it. It's three bags full. You know, and while minor things are being achieved by governments, in reality, senior politicians are content just to have a seat on the bus without any care for its destination or performance. That's a problem.
I think you underestimate your colleagues in government, do you not?
No, I don't. I know that they're all very capable people. They just are choosing not to exert the level of leadership that they're well capable of doing.
Mark, I would disagree with my experience of, say, the people.
When you get in there, you'll see.
No, but I mean, I've sat in on, say, Green Party parliamentary party meetings, and I've seen how hard those people work.
I never said anything about working hard. It's not about undermining individuals. It is not personal. It's 20 years experience of watching a system where we have a parliament that is totally subservient, not to the cabinet of the day anymore, to a senior civil servant who will not attend meetings and answer questions,
you mentioned the legislation,
with the Finance Committee.
The legislation which applies to that and needs to be changed, dating back one of them to 1956, did you say?
1924.
That's the point. It has always been thus, has it not?
Yeah.
Or has it not always been the case that?
No, it's about clearly defining the role of the minister as the responsible or the corporate soul, as it would say in the legislation. But secretaries general in many instances and agency chiefs in many instances have totally taken over this. And they've been let do so. So what I think we need to revisit these three pieces of legislation and reaffirm the fact that the people that we're electing, who claim in an election to have the power to do X, Y and Z, assume that power, assume that responsibility, and get punished if they don't fulfil it.
And Mark, why would you think that that this has happened? Because I do understand what you're saying, and I do agree with certain parts of what you're saying. But like, say Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have experienced this for the last 100 years because either party have been in leadership in this country. Why has it not been addressed? I mean, what's the benefit to them, to parties, for letting this happen? What's the benefit?
Because you get to subcontract the blame for everything to others. That is the problem.
But if you're in charge, you can't subcontract the blame.
It's a crisis in leadership. And it's been on a downward scale since the 2004 Health Act with the establishment of the HSE. And since then, that has been the model. So that the average answer now, be it from Eamon Ryan, any minister across the House, this administration, or any of the last four, will be, I'd like to thank the deputy for raising this very important issue. As the deputy knows, this is a matter for the HSE and Garda Síochána, the HEA. In other words, everybody but me. That is not acceptable. We cannot be electing governments, citizens' assemblies or anybody else who simply see themselves as an expensive brokerage for a number of unanswerable agencies and departments. That is not a democracy. That is a dictatorship, quite frankly, disguised as a democracy. We have a great country. It doesn't have to be all ripped up or anything like that, but we need a number of basic but very important changes around accountability and value for money.
Right, we've a couple of minutes left, and we'll try and lighten it somewhat because we are heading into a bank holiday weekend. There are all sorts of festivals being organised in this region, the Rory Gallagher Festival, Wild Roots, we have a Flacuole as well. Lachlan, who would you travel long distances to see and pay extra money to be entertained, like the lads from Sligo heading to Springsteen in Rome? Who would do it for you? Who?
Many of them are probably long gone, and I'd have to be travelling upwards to see them. I never got the chance to see Leonard Cohen when he was here, and that is one of my regrets. I did get offered tickets for him in Dublin, but there were standing only tickets and I can't stand, and that was... And actually, I was even getting those for free from a friend who couldn't go, and I could because I couldn't stand for that long. So Leonard Cohen would be... I'd probably travel... I don't know if I'd travel long distance to see somebody, really. I think... I do prefer the convenience. If it was here in Sligo, I would travel to Sligo, but I'm not so sure I would travel.
And would you be a festival person? Would you go to music?
Again, not anymore. I certainly was in my younger days. I loved them. It was great fun. I was able to, you know, get around. The idea of sleeping in a tent now is just beyond me. Not something that I would enjoy anymore. And, you know, as we all get older, we have to get up in the middle of the night more often, and I don't fancy traipsing across bodies to find the nearest facilities. So, no, tents aren't my thing in festivals. But I love music, and I think the idea of people getting together and getting out there and having the fun, and that's something we've missed. We lost that during the pandemic, that opportunity, you know, to see people and, you know, see everything about them. So on that note, if I could transport myself back about 20, 30 years, I'd certainly be off out there to whatever festival was going. And I'd endure the discomfort that I'm not prepared to do now.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's great to see festivals and gatherings like like this back, isn't it? Marcel Sherry and a bank holiday weekend.
Fantastic to see all of the events on. I was driving through Carrick yesterday evening, and A Taste of Carrick was on.
Yeah.
There was a great crowd at that. I know there was traffic associated. I'm sure if commuters were probably a bit annoyed, but it was great to see that taking place. You have the Wild Roots this weekend. You have Rory Gallagher. There's some, and you know, those committees and organisations and the people who organise all of these things, you know, stuck with it like during those few years, and I hope people will get out and support them. But it's really fantastic to see all these events on, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think, you know, I think the government has done a lot in supporting those festivals, in encouraging them to keep going. And, you know, that support was absolutely vital. And isn't it really wonderful to see these events in our locality?
Yeah.
And to see people... last week we had Africa Day at the Model in Sligo, and it was thronged, and it was absolutely the most beautiful event, because we had people who've come here as refugees. We have people who live here. We had people who work. It was just, and all the kids up dancing together. It was just the most amazing event, and beautiful to see people out enjoying themselves. And not as afraid as they were. I think the fear is starting to subside.
Yeah, well hopefully. This person agreeing totally with Blind would be Leonard Cohen for her. Who would it be for you, Marcel?
Sly Rovers, there.
That would be your
choice.
The old
Slane concert days are over for me, but I'd travel for a match, all right.
I'd travel to Leitrim if they got into the All-Ireland final. Now,
well, we'll all travel for that. Yeah. We'll certainly might be travelling for any
of those. They might get into the Tailteann Cup final if they can beat Sligo on Sunday.